It's time to reclaim control, not just of your law firm, but of your life. Welcome to the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. Discover how early adopters are leveraging cutting-edge legal tech and early adoption strategies to lead the industry while embracing work-life balance. Unlock the secrets to a thriving law practice and a balanced, happy life with the Law Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 408 of the Law Entrepreneur. I'm your co-host, Neil Tyra, along with my friend, Sam Malai. And today we're going to bring you an information-packed, value-packed episode on the 7 hiring mistakes that most lawyers make. And I know I've made several of these. I've seen more made than I care to admit by others. And we're going to help you hopefully avoid repeating the mistakes that others have made.
Totally. And it is action-packed, Neil, because whenever we're in business, we have to deal with people. Usually the people is the hardest part of every business. And the insights I will be sharing with you today will be really insightful and helping you with one of the most important aspects of your business, which is the people on your team, hiring, and make sure they have your dream team around you to be able to help you run your dream law firm. All right, Neil, let's not waste any time. Let's start with number one.
Something
that I feel super heated about is hiring talkers instead of doers. Hiring talkers instead of doers. I feel very heated about this because in the past couple of years, I fell for this trap. I've hired people that didn't realize that there were more talkers than doers. And then little by little, getting a little clues, hey, stuff is not getting done. But what they're saying doesn't really match the results that we're supposed to be expecting. And I realized the commonality between those types of people was that there were more talkers and doers. There's nothing wrong with if you're a talker, but if you're a talker, you need to be in a role that is a talker role. But there's also roles that requires stuff to get done. For that, you need to have doers in those roles. So let's talk about this. Let's go a little deep.
I think there's a tendency on the part of us as attorneys to give extra credit to people who, quote, handle the interview well, that they seem to be good on their feet. They seem to be conversational. They give a good rapport. And, that's has its value, but that's not always the sole reason for bringing somebody on board as a member of your team. As you said, you need folks who can get stuff done, not just simply talk about getting it done.
Yeah. And throughout the last 6 to 12 months, I kind of started picking up on the clues and the signs of the talkers. So let me share this with you. Number one, first sign of talkers is making too many promises of things that they're going to do. Once they kind of get clarity of what they're going to do, it's like, oh, I'm going to do this too. I'm also going to do this. And it's all make it sound so amazing. And you're like, I love that. Yes. Yeah. Let's do that too. And let's do that. And then you check back in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a couple of weeks, like, there to go. Oh yeah. No, I'm working on this thingy. And it's a repetitive cycle of things that I'm going to do, but that never really got follow through or completed. Sure, maybe they may have started it, but unfortunately, it was never completed and it didn't lead to anywhere. The second sign is talking about what they've done in the past, bringing up those experiences. Yeah, I worked at this company and I did this for them and I did this for them and all this stuff. But in reality, what you've done in the past is not a good indication of what you'll do in the future. And also there's probably dynamics that contributed to those factors, to that success. And maybe it was because of someone else you got these results and you just not get the credit for it. So now you're able to, for the rest of your life, kind of convince yourself that you're the one that delivered that result when ultimately it really wasn't. And number three is people that have longer meetings. I found that people that are talkers, usually the meetings are, if it's 30 minutes, it will go the full 30 minutes. But the people that are doers, usually it's much shorter meetings. And it's usually the interaction is usually them saying something, I say something, and they clarify it, and most I clarify it, and that's it. There's no more going outside of that realm. It's just like, just getting clear on it, and it's like, got it. And then they come back a day or two later to give you the report of what they've done. So if you find yourself in these longer meetings and you've got to fully explain and this and that, and again, go through all the angles and what if about this, what if about that, that's on you to figure those things out. You know, I'm just trying to give you the clarity. When it's to get done, what the end result is, you got to sort out through the middle stuff. So be cognizant again of those things. I kind of, the way that I kind of think about it is making promises is like talking about stuff in the future. And second one, talking about the stuff that they've done in the past. And then now the time, your present time is also elongated. So kind of be cognizant of these kind of changing the tense of the times and not having clarity of when it's to get done now. And then kind of self-reporting when when that work has been done.
Yeah. And I think people are going to, out there in the audience are going to be saying, well, then how do I know that I'm hiring the right person? I mean, I've got to go through some of this to kind of to see if they're going to be able to handle the tasks that I'm looking to address. I think our subsequent points are going to bring some clarity to that, because I think we oftentimes want to be so certain that this person is the right fit for the job that we end up sabotaging ourselves. And so as we're going to talk about some of these other points, I think that will resolve itself as we address these other issues.
Great point, Neil. I agree. You know, it's kind of the way that I see it. It's nothing's ever fully clear. If it was, then these mistakes wouldn't happen. You got to take a little bit of clues and just try to add them up. And even then, even if you do that, you are still, you know, going to fall for some of these mistakes, and it's okay. Yeah. It's kind of like poker. You know, you take your best guess, you make the best, assumption. And then, you know, the more you can consistently do that over time, you know, the better poker player you will be. But you're never going to be spot on at every single hand when it comes to poker.
Indeed.
Number two is not hiring enough. Not hiring enough. This is so important. Neil, you want to talk about this one?
Yeah. So attorneys oftentimes, you know, we make the decision to hire based on how overworked we and our staff are. You know, we like, I'm not going to hire, you know, somebody to fill this role or fill this responsibility, you know, until I have a certainty that everybody's at their max, and where we there's no other choice but to bring somebody else in to relieve this pressure. And that's exactly the wrong approach. You have advocated for a long time, Sam, hire early. Okay. Hire before you think you have the need. You have to have a strategic view of what you're looking for, but you're going to get far more value out of hiring somebody earlier, because think about it. The rest of your staff recognizes that you have that vision to know that the workload is going to demand that somebody address this issue 6 months down the road. We don't want to wait till 6 months after the issue is presented. We want to address it 6 months before it hits the fan, so to speak. So when you do that, your existing staff looks to you and says, well, this guy or this gal, they get it. You know, they want to make sure that everybody's working at the most efficient level possible. Then on top of that, you know, you need time to be able to, as we're going to talk about later, to define the role and to do the onboarding process. If you wait until the hiring is mandated by the fact that you're completely overworked, you're not going to have time to do the things that are going to make the hire successful. So not hiring enough is I can't speak more passionately about how that is an absolute necessity.
Yeah. And you brought up that rule that I always try to have with hiring, which is proactively hire to where you want to be in 6 months. So ask yourself, where do I want to be in 6 months? and then hire now based on where you want to be. And I learned this, I had to learn this kind of concept myself from my mentor, you know, proactively hiring ahead of time, because it will take some time, first of all, to find that person. Maybe you do have to go through a couple of those hires, maybe a couple of the talkers and doers, a couple of the talkers or people who are not, you know, perfect for that role. And then it will take them also some time for them to get good at their role. So by the time you actually have that need, you know, it will take usually 3 to 6 months. So kind of proactively hire. The other kind of the issue that I see is a lot of people have money concerns with this, you know, I can't afford it kind of attitude. But I think there's a limiting belief. When people hear about $100,000 salary, people freak out because people think like $100,000, I can't afford $100,000. Well, you're not paying for $100,000 upfront. That rate of when you hire somebody, you're hiring somebody to help you get return on your investment. That leads to hiring, which we'll talk about shortly, for an initial period to see if they have the ROI. If they have an ROI during that time, then at that point, it's just about, but is this worth it or not? It's not necessarily, you know, you're not making a complete, like just straight up monetary $100,000 decision. Is it bringing me return my investment kind of hire, which we'll talk about.
So, yeah, this is going to dovetail in with the next point on the list here, but I think I don't think we as attorneys give this enough attention. The idea that you have a trial period and that your candidate doesn't always have to be this way, but the candidate may earn less money during the trial period until they prove their ROI. And then when you're satisfied that this is the right higher, then you take them up to the salary that is commensurate with the job that they're doing. We don't tend to do that in the legal space. You see it in all other industries a lot, and I think we would be well advised to learn from that.
Yeah. So let's talk about number three, which is skipping the trial period. You know, dating before you marry. A lot of people just try to get married from day one. They fell in love with somebody who, you know, was really good at the interview. All of a sudden you start buying them their computer that they want and all the stuff, and then it'll only take you a couple of weeks and you're like, wait a minute, this is not the person that I kind of married. So you got to date before you marry somebody, have an initial period, and for us it's usually 60 to 90 days, usually pretty quickly. Within a couple of weeks you'll have to tell, you know, based on their traits and their characteristics, is this somebody who's sustainable? And I could tell right away for us people who join, I know with certainty, pretty certainty, is this person going to, you know, be sustainable with us? And
yeah, you know, trust your instincts there too, Sam. You know, you're 100% correct. And I like the dating analogy. Although it's been a long time since I've dated, I'm married 43 years, but I have children who are dating. And, you know, the concept that you know pretty soon whether that person is for you, going to be something that or someone that you can count on for long term. So the same is true in hiring. Trust your instincts. If you don't have that feeling pretty quickly, don't wait around.
Yeah, maybe. And you know, within that 60 90 day mark, I think it should be pretty indicative of, you know, is it somebody that I want to work with long term or not? If not, then it's probably better to just, you know, rip that Band-Aid and move on.
Yeah, and look, it's also true for the person that you're hiring, that gives them time to assess whether they feel they're going to be a fit in your organization, and you'd rather give them the opportunity to bail out sooner rather than later when you have a defined, clear trial period.
Yeah, life is short, and if you're like miserable about somebody that's on your team, like, what's the point? So
what is the point?
What's the point? You got to enjoy who you work with. Else,
that is so true. I mean, I can't tell you how many attorneys I've heard, you know, bitch and moan about people they have on their staff, and I'm like, well, aren't you the boss?
Just move on. Yeah, people have a hard time moving on. Number four is failing to define the role clearly. And this is a huge trap that a lot of people have, you know, especially if you get upset at a lot of people on your team, usually means that their role isn't clearly defined, or to have a mix of roles, or, you know, there's crossovers of roles. Everybody needs to be very clear. What is their position? Clearly, exactly what's their position title? And with clarity, what are the 3 to 5 things that they're in charge of? And then what's the goal of their role? Ideally, numerical goal. You know, your role is to take care of 20 clients per month. Your goal is to onboard 20 new clients per month. Your goal is to sign up 20 clients per month. See how you can define every role into some kind of numerical divided by a number of months so that it's clear, hey, you could do whatever you want. As long as this one goal that that I want from you is accomplished, then we're golden. So make sure that that is very clear for them and clear for you, so we're on the same page.
Yeah, as the leader of your organization, as the head of your firm, this is the bare minimum, frankly. If you're going to manage a team, you got to define what role everybody on the team has. I mean, imagine a sports team, a football team, a baseball team, where you don't have roles and responsibilities defined by position. And just have people running around doing whatever they want to do, it's not going to be a successful team. And same is true in law. To me, it's the bare minimum as a firm owner when it comes to hiring. You have to be able to define what the role and what the job is of the people that you're hiring. Simple as that.
Great. Let's go to number 5, which is overvaluing credentials over capability. Okay, focusing too much on the resume, what school they went to, where they worked, because ultimately you're hiring a person, not necessarily where they worked. And for me, the last thing I look at is what school they went to, exactly what company they worked at. I'm looking for the intangibles in a job interview. Something that me and my directors always talk about is little signs early on, either in the interview process, the post-interview interaction, the onboarding process, how did they come off? Some things that I look for in a job interview is their setting. What does their behind them look like? If it's messy, major cause for concerns. If they're not in the right put together, they don't take care of themselves, concerns. If you don't have a good handle on yourself and your surroundings and your own, surroundings, then it's kind of signs. Those kind of intangibles, I think, are probably more important than the typical stuff that people expect. A lot of people, especially these days, can use ChatGPT to improve their resumes and make it look much fancier than it is. For me, I'm trying to look beyond that, look beneath the surface. How do they speak? How do they speak too much? Are they talkers? Can they, when they share something, can they provide proof and links for what they're talking about? Those kinds of things, I think, are crucial versus their past credentials.
Yeah, I think we fall into a trap as attorneys, if we're hiring attorneys, okay, of looking at those credentials and overemphasizing those credentials versus what type of team player that attorney may be on your team. For non-attorney positions, I think we've all seen folks who are book smart versus street smart. And many times I want that street smart individual over the book smart individual because they're the doers, not the talkers.
Love that. Love that, Neil. That's a really good point. All right, number 6 is neglecting onboarding and training. Hiring somebody, give them some stuff maybe, and they're like, go. I'm like, what? you got to put yourself in their shoes. The first 30 days are really crucial for people that are joining an existing system that's already running. It's kind of like a locomotive. And somebody just gets dropped in the middle and they got to figure things out. Things are very unclear. What's going on? Who's who? What am I doing? What am I supposed to be doing? What are my priorities? And you got to help them provide that clarity about these are the tools that we use. These are the things that you should be doing. These should be what your first 30, 60, 90 day priorities should be. And these are the people that you're probably going to be working with. You need to provide that to them in a written format. If you can explain to them, even better. And then also pair them up with, ideally, with somebody on your team who can get them up to speed and somebody that they could tap into throughout the day for them to get up to speed so they could pick things up quickly and have clarity about what their main priorities are.
I think this is the biggest failure of law firm owners in the hiring process. I really do. And it borders, in my opinion, on professional, what's the word I'm looking for, just being irresponsible. Because you can't expect success by just hiring somebody and plopping them down and say, okay, have at it. I'll see you in 90 days for your evaluation. Okay, you owe it to that person to have a proper onboarding scheme and the necessary training to give them the best opportunity to exceed. Having done that, if they don't, well, then you've got your answer. But it's almost guaranteed failure if you have neglected the onboarding process or the training process. If you don't have a library of videos that show exactly what you want that person to be doing and how they do their job, if you don't have standard operating procedures, if you don't have job guides to define what the individual's responsibilities are, if you don't have that, you are guaranteeing failure. And it's just, there's no way around it.
Nope. Number seven is not considering remote candidates, kind of limiting yourself to just people that you hire in-house. That unfortunately limits you. And over time, you know, the market will become more and more competitive and more saturated, where your talent that lives within a 10 to 15 mile radius of your office will be more and more limited. So you really have to proactively think outside of that talent pool, look to hire people from either across the US or even across the world. And once you do that, you'll see that you'll find more, even better, more dedicated, higher value kind of people once you tap into this bigger talent pool that is the entire world.
Couldn't agree more, Sam. And, you know, I was always stunned by folks, particularly coming out of the COVID experience, who claimed they just couldn't find qualified candidates to fill the positions that they needed filling. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, you're just not thinking globally enough, because there's qualified candidates everywhere. You just have to be open to the idea of, you know, looking beyond 15 miles, you know, geographically from your office. It's just not even practical anymore. You really need to tap into that talent pool that, as you said, is located throughout the country and around the world.
And there's always limiting beliefs about this. You know, some people are like, well, you know, there's language barriers, there's accents, how do you trust them, all this stuff.
One how can story I make that sure they're actually working?
Yeah, make sure that they're working.
That always stunned me.
One example that I have is for one of my law firms. At the time, we were struggling to find a director who can come and manage it in-house, somebody, you know, that could come to our office. So we had no choice but to have one of our VAs manage it. And at the time, it was, you know, he didn't know it, but it was like a $10 million law firm managed by a VA from overseas.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had, I think at the time, it was like 60, 70 people under him with 30, 40 intakers. And that kind of opened my eyes, you know, that, you know, no, virtual assistants can be really effective and valuable. It does take some time to find the right people, but there are stellar superstars out there that can do a lot for you.
Yeah, you know, look, if you need somebody like a fractional CFO to help give you that 40,000 foot perspective on your finances, that person can be remote, and you're gonna find lots of candidates that fill that role. And that's just one example. You know, you're talking about a director who could manage the firm. I'm talking about a CFO who can provide you insight into your finances. You need to be able to widen the footprint of your search pool.
Sure. All right. So to recap, the seven hiring mistakes every lawyer needs to avoid. Number one, hiring talkers instead of doers. Hire more doers. Unless if you're hiring somebody for in a sales or intake role, then maybe then you need to hire a talker for that role. Number two, not hiring enough. Be proactive in your hiring approach. Try to hire 6 months ahead because it does take some time until you find the right person. Number three, skipping the trial period. Date before you marry. have a 60 or 90 day goal for that person. If they accomplish it, great. Then you can at that point marry them and be with them long term. Number four, failing to define their role. Clearly, be very clear and concrete about exactly what their goals are, what they're going to be focusing on, so that they're clear and that you're clear. Number five, overvaluing credentials over capability. Look for those intangibles, those things that really shows those signs that shows that no, they could actually do what they're supposed to be doing. You know, don't put too much focus on what they've done in the past. Number six, don't neglect onboarding and training. Give your people that join your team best chance to succeed when they join. And number seven, make sure to consider remote candidates, because when you do that, you will tap into a better talent pool who can provide more value for your law firm. If you got value from this episode, please take a moment to give this episode a review. And if you can, please think of one person you can share this episode with. Our audience is growing, right, Neil?
Yeah, doing well. Glad to see the uptick in folks who are listening to the podcast. And don't be afraid to leave a comment wherever you are listening to your podcast on. There's various ways to do that. We love to have the feedback, and we love to see what people are thinking about the episodes that we're presenting.
For sure. We're here to serve. Now, both me and Neil enjoy doing this. We don't have to do this, but I think we want to be able to learn from each other and be able to learn from teaching. But we also need that feedback from you to know how we can also always improve and, you know, get better at this. So we appreciate you contributing to that success and that growth. We appreciate you. We have a bunch of episodes that are high value that are coming. So make sure to just tune in every week. And we have switched to the weekly episodes that are being posted every single Friday. So be on the lookout for those. I hope we were a good part of your weekend. And yeah, thank you so much for listening in, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Appreciate it, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.